You will begin reading in Joshua this week as we're reading through the Word together in our one-year Bibles. I kind of want to do a thing here and combine three or four chapters because for the next week, I keep reading through on your daily reading, but we're going to take a break. I won't be teaching anything that you're reading until after Easter. We're going to focus in on the events of the Easter week for the next several studies together. But in this account of crossing the Jordan, we learn four truths of how God still enables His people to cross the barriers before them. God's people still face barriers. The children of Israel were facing a barrier, you know, the Jordan. For you, the barrier that you may have tonight is probably not a river, but maybe it's a habit. Maybe it's an attitude. Maybe it's a sin. Possibly a grudge. An addiction, maybe. Maybe a financial challenge. Maybe joblessness. A divorce. Outside expectations. Family situations. Loved ones that you know that are in a bad place or whatever. These could be the Jordans that you're facing or the barriers you're facing. But as I was reading Joshua, number one, I thought, you know, God always prepares His people. God prepared Israel to cross the Jordan. As we have been working our way through the Bible, we've learned so far that how God brought Israel to the border of the Promised Land 40 years earlier. Through many plagues, He delivered them from slavery in Egypt. He parted the Red Sea. He gave them His law on Mount Sinai. He fed them in the wilderness. He defeated their enemies in battle. And when He leads them to the land, when He led them to the land, He told Moses to send in spies to see the land He was giving them. Remember back in Numbers? 10 of the 12 spies brought back a bad report. And the people, because of the bad report, rebelled against God. As punishment, as a result of that, God allowed that whole generation, everyone over 20, to die in the wilderness. So they wander for another 40 years. And when the last of the rebels were dead, God brought His people again to the edge of the Promised Land. This time, they're standing on the banks of the Jordan on the east. God prepared Joshua to cross the Jordan. Look at verse 1. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon I have given you, as I said to Moses. From the wilderness of this Lebanon, and this Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and to the great sea, toward the going down of the sun, shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I shall be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Now, Moses had just recently died. We talked about that our last session together. God raised up Joshua as the new national leader. Now, you remember Joshua and Caleb were the two spies who brought back a faithful report 40 years before this. I find it significant that before God does a work among His people, He prepares leadership and gives that leadership vision. No doubt, as Joshua, now probably the oldest man among them, looked at the rushing waters of the Jordan, and as he's doing that, God spoke to him. Notice in verse 2, arise, go over this Jordan, the land which I am giving you. God seems to be saying, don't doubt me, pal, I'm with you. It's okay, we're going to make it. And then in verses 3, 5 to 7, God encourages him to not be afraid, but to go out and conquer. Over and over again, as we've read it, he says, be strong and of good courage. Then in verses 8 and 9, God reminds Joshua of the importance of Scripture. He says, you need to meditate on the law of the Lord day and night. You know, meditate on the law. And I hear people saying, I don't have time to read the one-year Bible every morning. 10 minutes, 15 minutes at the max, if you're, you know, not a fast reader. Doesn't take very long. And I hear people say, I just don't have time to do that. And I look at Joshua, who is now in charge of probably 3 million people. Okay, pretty busy. Any of you guys that busy? Anybody have a staff that big? I can't handle the one I have. You know, 3 million people, man. Okay? And all of the things he has to do, and God tells him, he doesn't tell him, read the one-year Bible 10 minutes a day. What does he tell him? He says, you meditate on the law of the Lord day and night. Meditate means to read it, to take it in, to dwell upon it. You've heard it before. Meditate is the illustration is a cow chewing its cud. Swallows, regurgitates, brings it back up. Isn't this interesting? Brings it back up, chews it again. That's the cud. Chews it again, swallows it again, brings it back up, chews it again. That's what he's saying about the Word of God. Meditate it. Meditate on it day and night. Read it. Bring it back up. That's what has been so absolutely phenomenal for me to watch. As we've been going through the Bible together, and you've been reading the one-year Bible, we've been reading the one-year Bible since January together, what's been phenomenal to me is watching people standing around or sitting around talking about what they've been reading. That's meditating. That's meditating together. That is so fantastic. And what a change that brings into our lives. And then Joshua prepared the people to cross the Jordan. He prepared the people, okay, to cross the Jordan. Look at verse 10. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the camp and command the people, saying, prepare provisions for yourselves. For within 3 days you will cross over this Jordan to go in to possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess. And to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and half the tribe of Manasseh, Joshua spoke, saying, remember the Lord, the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, the Lord your God is giving you rest and is giving you this land. Your wives, your little ones, and your livestock shall remain in the land which Moses gave you on this side of the Jordan. But you shall pass before your brethren armed, all your mighty men of valor, and help them. Until the Lord has given your brethren rest, until the Lord has given your brethren rest as he gave you, and they also have taken possession of the land which your Lord your God is giving them. Then you shall return to the land of your possession and enjoy it, which Moses, the Lord's servant, gave you on this side of the Jordan toward the sunrise. So they answered Joshua, saying, all that you command us, we will do. And wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we heeded Moses in all things, so we will heed you. Only the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Who rebels against your command does not heed your words, and all that you command him shall be put to death. Only be strong and of good courage. Joshua told his officers to go through the camp, over 2-3 million people, and say, prepare provisions for yourselves. Provisions comes from the Hebrew word that means food or meat. He says, prepare food or meat, things to eat, because they were to know that within 3 days you're going to cross over the Jordan. I'm sure that they looked at the churning waters beside their camp and they thought, terrific. You know, they heard the stories about the Red Sea, but they weren't there. Okay, this is a whole new generation, man. And the officers are going through the camp. Prepare for yourselves, victuals, man. Get your knapsacks going, because get them prepared, because in 3 days you're gonna cross over the Jordan. The last part of the message is that you will possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess. Notice Joshua's special word to the tribes who would inhabit the eastern bank of the Jordan in verse 13. Okay? You're to go in and fight, but you're come back to this land. The people had not forgotten the lessons their parents learned 40 years earlier. You don't see anybody murmuring. You don't see anybody hesitating. They said in verse 16, okay, chief, all that you command us we will do, and wherever you send us we will go. Notice in verse 18 they decided that they would not tolerate any grasshopper syndrome. They must have heard the stories for 40 years. Hey, kids, we were supposed to go in there. We murmured and complained. God told us he gave it to us. We wouldn't believe him. We didn't go in. Don't make the same mistake when he allows you to go in next time. Move on in. So when the time came, they didn't murmur, they didn't complain, they didn't question. They just said, wherever you tell us to go, we're going to go. Whatever you tell us to do, we're going to do. Man. God is preparing us, church, to cross the barriers before us. God is asking many of us to cross some barrier tonight. I really believe that. Maybe one of the barriers I mentioned earlier. Maybe a habit, an attitude, an addiction, something, concern. Whatever that barrier is, know that if God is asking you to cross it, God has prepared you for that event. Whether you believe it or understand it or not, God has prepared you to cross that barrier, whatever it is in your life tonight. As I look back on my life, I can see how God has brought me exactly where I am tonight. I can look back and see how my childhood, my parents, my education, my experiences of walking with God have brought me exactly to the place that I am. As we anticipate even the future of this church, we know that God has prepared for us for such a moment as this. Because there's things he's going to call us to do in the near future. I know that. And I know because he's doing that, he has provided the people. He has provided the ability. He's provided the leadership. He's provided the vision for whatever he calls this church to cross over our river, our fear, and our hesitancy to become the church he wants us to be will be taken care of, and we'll cross over that because he's prepared us. I believe that with my whole heart. God's vision for you and for this church is not to stay where you are, but to cross over. Why stay in the wilderness? If you have barriers that are standing before you, why stay in the wilderness, man? I mean, crossing over isn't easy. It requires faith. In fact, that's the next lesson that we need to learn. God always, always, always challenges our faith. Turn to chapter 3. Joshua challenged the people. Look at verse 1. Then Joshua rose early in the morning. Do you notice they're always saying that in the Bible? So-and-so rose early in the morning. You know, the psalmist is always talking about early in the morning. I'd just as soon sleep in and get up late in the morning. But it seems like all the good things that happen with God is early in the morning, so maybe why some of us are missing it. You know, we need to rise up early in the morning. Because maybe God just sends his people out early in the morning to talk. I don't know. But I see that over and over and over again. Then Joshua rose early in the morning. They set out for Acacia Grove and came to the Jordan, he and all the children of Israel, and lodged there before they crossed over. So it was after 3 days that the officers went through the camp, and they commanded the people, saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the priests, the Levites, bearing it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you must go, for you have not passed this way before. And Joshua said to the people, sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Now chapter 2 is an interlude in which Joshua sent 2 spies into the first city of Canaan on the other side of the river Jericho. And we'll examine that part of the story another time. Okay? Verses 1 to 4 here detail the camp of Israel moving from Acacia Grove or Shittim to the edge of the Jordan. They lodged or camped there before they crossed over. The priests led the way to where they would cross by carrying the Ark of the Covenant. Now Joshua challenged the people with this strong command. He says, sanctify, or that means consecrate, purify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. What a challenge. They were to sanctify or make themselves holy. We need that challenge. We need to put aside all the garbage and the filth that keeps us from serving God. I believe only true happiness comes in a right relationship with God. I believe true success is totally designed by or defined by being obedient to God. I believe we're fulfilled as we walk in obedience to God. And we get sidetracked. And somehow, we think we're smarter than God. We think we're exceptions. We think we can do what we want to do and get away with it. And everything's going to be okay. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever man sows, that shall he also reap. Sow to the flesh, you reap of the flesh. Sow to the Spirit, you reap of the Spirit. That's just God's truth, man. And so if there are things in our lives, you know, whatever it is that is hindering us, that keeps us from serving God, we need to put aside that stuff. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 3 says this, "For we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lewdness, lusts, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries." It says we've done that long enough. So the question is, in what way do we need to sanctify ourselves? In what way do we need to set ourselves, you know, apart for God? The Israelites needed to put aside the fear and doubt of the previous generation. You may need to put aside some sin. I don't know. Habit, attitude that keeps you from serving God. Whatever it is, whatever keeps you from serving God, whether it's fear, whether it's doubt, whether it's slothfulness, whether it's an attitude, whether it's sin that you've got yourself convinced it's okay, whatever it is that keeps you from serving God, you need to give that to Him, sanctify yourself, set yourself apart for God. That's what it means to sanctify. God, I'm available to you. World, flesh, I'm unavailable to you. I'm only available to what you want in my life, Lord. And I'll tell you what, when you do that, your life will begin to change. It'll really begin to change, man. So in what way do we need to do that? What a promise. Think about this. The people were to sanctify themselves. Why? Great promise. Because tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. I don't think I'm stretching this verse any to say that the same is true for us. Here's His promise to you, church. Here's His promise to me. If you will put God first, He promises blessings. It's what I read in Matthew 6:33, is it not? Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. All what things? All the things you're striving for. Your house, your clothing, your food, your job, your security, all of that stuff. He says, if you seek me first, I'll take care of all of that. Do we invert that most of the time? God, as soon as I take care of this stuff and become secure here, then I can probably, you know, squeeze some time in here to be able to serve you somehow. When He says to serve Him first, and if we serve Him, He will bless us. Bless us by meeting the needs of the stuff that we are now exerting our energy and our time to somehow serve ourselves or to take care of ourselves. What a great promise. If you as an individual, if I as an individual, if we as a church will seek God first, give Him the glory, He assures us of a fantastic future beyond our wildest dreams. And I'll tell you what, something's going on, man, in my life, in my spirit, and I can't make it infectious. I can't get you excited. All I can do is just read you the Bible. That's all I basically do, you know, and talk to you about this stuff. But I'll tell you what, man, you need to jump in. The water's great. I am having the time of my life, okay? I kind of feel like Caleb, you know? I'm as strong now in my spiritual walk as I was, you know, Caleb saying 40 years ago, man. Give me the mountain. Give me the land with the giants. You know, I want to go in and kick some people out of that land. Okay. And he says, you know, give me the tough stuff because I'll take care of it. And man, you know, that's kind of where my life is right now. God, you know, the challenges are great. It's cool. Let's go for it. Let's take some territory back from the enemy, man. He's taken some territory in your life. He's taken some of your joy. He's taken some of your peace. He's taken some of your gentleness. He's taken some of that love out of your life. He's taken some of that, all those things. He's taken them out. Take it back. Move back in and reestablish those things in your life in Jesus' name, man. It's there for you. And you're just being beat up and you're getting defeated and you're allowing it. You're thinking it's okay. And so I don't know. Just poor me. Nobody knows the trouble I've seen. You know. And Jesus, I do. I was there. Trust me and I'll walk it through with you. And I don't know, maybe I'm the only one. And I hope not, but if I'm the only one, I'm having the time of my life. Because there's something just welling up inside that's just, it's an excitement, man. You know, it's incredible. I was at Juvenile Hall. I hadn't been there in a long time. I don't go in there much anymore. And they're trying to convince me to do that. I got to go tomorrow and dedicate one of the new facilities. And I'm going to re-put together the church stuff in there do that for them. I don't know how much time I'm going to spend to myself. I would like to spend some time. I just don't know what my schedule is going to allow. Because as I walked through there today, I couldn't believe what just walking through there in the light of Jesus was doing, man. Just staff, kids, you know, Pastor Chuck. Where are you, man? Can I talk to you? I couldn't get out of there. Staff following me all the way to my car. You know, three of the staff, you know, well, I'm going to be at church on Sunday. Well, why would you say that? You've never been there. You know, and one guy told me, if you'll come back in here, I'll start going to church. You know, I said, well, you need to go to church because, you know, God's calling you to do that, man. Don't make a condition on me. And it was just incredible, the things that were going on. I just, what's going on? It was just, you know, kids saying, Pastor Chuck, can we talk? It was just the light, you know, nothing to do with me. And I was just having a good time. And that's what this life is all about. Doesn't mean I don't have any pressures and concerns and hurts right now. I do. But I'll tell you what, it's okay. I'm not going to let them be barriers to me serving God to the fullest of my ability. The stuff that I've always thought was important, the stuff that some of you guys think is important, it's not. It's going to go up in smoke one day really, really soon. Do you realize all that stuff's going up in smoke? All that's going to remain is, you know, love, hope. That's all that's going to remain. All that other stuff you're striving about, you're so worried about. You watch a little ticker thing going on the bottom of the screen. Those things drive me crazy anyway. You know? I think it was Brian that was telling me. He says, take some of that duct tape they're trying to sell and just put it on the bottom of your screen. that's a place it ought to be because I'm trying to listen and read this. And you know, this guy's saying something opposite of what this is saying. I just throw up my hand. I don't know what's going on here. Man. Drives me nuts, man. What that has to do with anything, I just thought I'd share with you. It drives me nuts. In verses 6 through 13, the priest led the people. Look at verse 6. Then Joshua spoke to the priest, saying, take up the Ark of the Covenant and cross over before the people. So they took up the Ark of the Covenant, went before the people. And the Lord said to Joshua, this day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. You shall command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant, saying, when you have come to the edge of the water of the Jordan, you shall stand in the Jordan. So Joshua said to the children of Israel, come here and hear the words of the Lord your God. And Joshua said, by this you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Hivites and the Perizzites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Jebusites. Behold, the ark of the covenant of the Lord of all the earth is crossing over before you into the Jordan. Now, therefore, take yourselves 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one man from every tribe. And it shall come to pass as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests who bear the ark of the Lord of all the earth shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, that the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off, the waters that come down from upstream, and they shall stand as a heap. According to God's will, Joshua instructed the priest to take up the Ark of the Covenant and cross over before the people. Then they were to take the Ark down to the river. Verse 8 says, when you come to the edge of the river of the Jordan, you shall stand in the Jordan. Most of my life, I have pictured this scene as the priests walking across a gently sloping sandy beach. Maybe I saw a picture, but that's what I kind of pictured. Not so. Because the Jordan River ran so quickly downhill, it cut a deep crevice in the land, according to scholars, was about 12 feet deep, even close to the bank. So they weren't just stepping into just a puddle of water here, okay? It's kind of slopes down. It's not like our beaches. It slopes down, and I'm, okay, as soon as I put my foot in this, 16th of an inch of water, everything's going to be okay. That isn't what it was. It was 12 feet deep, right close to the banks. Though it was only 50 to 75 feet across, the rapid flow of the current made it very, very dangerous. Now in verses 10 through 13, when the priests put their feet in the water, they had to exercise faith. Because when they put their feet in the water, it wasn't like you go to the beach and you want to see how cold it is, And you run to the, oh, that's cold, run back. Okay. That isn't what the priests were supposed to do. It wasn't just put the little toe in and watch the water separate, okay? When they stepped in the Jordan, they stepped in the Jordan with faith. Because they would either be in over their heads and pulled downstream by the current. And they probably they couldn't swim. They'd been raised their entire life in the desert. Am I right? They had no Hiltons to, go swimming once in a while in the pool, or no public, pools or anything. They'd been raised in the desert for 40 years. They'd been walking around in the desert. They didn't know how to swim. So he says, step in the Jordan. 12 feet deep, step in the Jordan, man. Okay? That took a step of faith. Because they were either, when they stepped in and there was a raging current in the Jordan, so they're going to, well, that didn't work. So as I was studying this passage, the Lord impressed upon me that he made the priests, the spiritual leaders, exercise faith first. That's quite a challenge. The Lord wants leaders of the church to be the first to exercise faith as we're crossing over new barriers. God wants to raise up more leaders. It'll just take the steps of faith and say, okay, we'll walk in obedience to whatever you want to do, man. The people crossed the river on dry ground. Look at verse 14. So it worked. So it was when the people set out from their camp to cross over the Jordan, with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as those who bore the Ark came to the Jordan, and the feet of the priests who bore the Ark dipped in the edge of the water of the Jordan, for the Jordan overflows all its banks during the whole time of harvest, that the waters which came down from upstream stood still and rose in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is beside Zaratan. So the waters that went down to the Sea of the Arabah, the salt sea, failed and were cut off, and the people crossed over opposite Jericho. Then the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all Israel crossed over on dry ground until all the people had crossed completely over the Jordan. I have always pictured this scene, the first and the last guy going across. The first guy, he doesn't know if the water's going to stay up on each side. This has never happened, Probably run as fast as he can, to see if this works. And the last guy, I don't want this to go back too soon, I don't know. I just think of these weird things. Verse 15 tells us the Jordan overflows all its bank during the whole time of harvest. The river was in flood stage. It was especially treacherous. As soon as their feet dipped into the edge of the water, <laughs> The waters which came down from upstream stood still and rose up in a heap very far away, it says. The salt sea or the Dead Sea to the south was cut off. Verse 17 says that the priest with the ark stood firm on dry ground. No sinking or no bogging in the mud in the midst of the Jordan. God not only held back the water, but also removed every trace of it from the riverbed, because the riverbed was even totally dry, because it says the priest stood in the middle of the riverbed on dry ground. Meanwhile, these 2-3 million people crossed completely over the Jordan. Wow. You know, God always keeps his promises. Turn to chapter 4. Now, God gave some specific instruction to Joshua. Look at verse 1. And it came to pass when all the people had completely crossed over the Jordan that the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one man from every tribe, and command them, saying, take for yourselves 12 stones from here out of the midst of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet stood firm. You shall carry them over with you and leave them in the lodging place where you lodge tonight. So when everyone had completely crossed over the Jordan, the Lord told Joshua to take a man from each of the 12 tribes and to go back out into the center of the river at the place where the priest's feet stood firm. They were to take 12 stones from this spot in the middle of the river. The only way they could ever, you know, have ever been moved was by stopping the flow, you know, of that rushing current. You know, that's how so that was stopped again. God performed another miracle so they could get the stones, because with the current flowing, they wouldn't have never been able to pick up those stones. Joshua instructed the men to get the stones. Verse 4, then Joshua called the 12 men whom he had appointed from the children of Israel, one man from each tribe, and Joshua said to them, cross over before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan, and each one of you take up a stone and a shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign among you when your children ask in time to come, saying, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall answer them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord when it crossed over the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be for a memorial to the children of Israel forever. Just as the Lord had commanded, Joshua sent 12 men out of the midst of the riverbed. Each one took up a stone upon his shoulder, one for each of the tribes of Israel. Joshua said that these stones would be a sign that later on, when the generations passed and their children would ask what the large stones meant, they were to tell how the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. He went on to say, these stones shall be a memorial to the children of Israel forever. From that time on, the stones remind the nation that God always keeps his promises. You know, church, I think there is such a lesson to learn there. We all, every one of us, have stones in our lives. As I look back on my life, I can see many stones. You might call them milestones. These are memorial stones of experiences where God has proven himself faithful. We all have those. I can remember when we were first married, broke, living in Glendale, trying to go to school with way too much month at the end of the money, you know. I remember those things. And I remember my heart condition and surgery. I remember times of incredible stress in ministry. I look back at each of these memorial stones, remembering that my God is faithful. And he got us through each and everything. Lamentations 3:22 and 23 says, through the Lord's mercies we are not consumed. Why? Because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. You want to write that verse down? That's an important verse, man. Lamentations 3:22 and 23. Through the Lord's mercies we are not consumed. Because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. That's a chorus we used to sing many years ago. And it's so encouraging. The history of this church is rich in stones, memorial stones. It really began, and some of the people that were helping us at the beginning, it really began as what we might call a mission church over 30 years ago. You know, downtown Palm Springs, trying to reach the street kids and the hippies and, you know, those up in Tockwitz Canyon. And that's what God did. This building was built with love and care by, you know, people that were here back in 1984. And the love and care of putting every piece of wood in this ceiling and all that they did. And these are, to me, all memories, all memorial stones. We would write down during the building projects the miracles that God performed time after time. Those are all stones, you know. Through thick and thin, God has always provided our needs. And you need to have stones in your life. I'm not talking about kidney stones or, you know, gallbladder stones. Some of you have had those, and God bless you. So, me too. But you need stones of remembrance. Build little altars of remembrance. Remember what God has done for you. So when something comes up and he says, okay, all of a sudden you realize here's a barrier that's keeping me from really serving God. You go back to the stones and somebody says, what are those doing there? Oh, that reminds me of the day that God, and he healed your body, man. He raised up your sick child. He sent the check. He got you the job. You know, he fulfilled that promise, man. We all have stones in our lives, and that's if you don't go back to those and look at those, I don't mean you don't live in the past, man. But you need to remember those things that he's already done in your life. So it bolsters your faith when new barriers come. You go, well, God did this. This is a piece of cake. You know, and we all have the miracles that God's performed in our lives. The way he's been with us and got us through that valley. I didn't say he got you out of the valley, got you through it, man. Maybe you went through a devastating time. Maybe you went through a terrible divorce. Maybe you went through a loss of a loved one. Maybe you went through a bankruptcy. Maybe you went through whatever it is, a health situation, you know, losing a spouse or a loved one or a child or a parent or all of those things. But you know what? God was faithful in getting you through that. And you know that. He gave you the grace and the peace to be able to walk through that thing. You need to rejoice and build those stones, man. Build those memorials. I have papers all over my office and drawers of things that I've written down of what God has done, man. And they're memorials for me, man. Don't fear the future. Don't balk at the current, the flow of the river. Don't shrink back from the barriers. On the other side is the promise that God has given us. God is faithful to keep his promises. The barriers are nothing if we cross in his strength. Fourth and last point, God always glorifies his name. The crossing was completed. Look at verse 8 of chapter 4. And the children of Israel did so, just as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones from this of the Jordan, as the Lord had spoken to Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, and carried them over with them to the place where they lodged and laid them down there. Then Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant stood, and they are there to this day, the writing of this book. So the priests who bore the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord had commanded Joshua to speak to the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua, and the people hurried and crossed over. Then it came to pass when all the people had completely crossed over that the ark of the Lord and the priests crossed over in the presence of the people. And the men of Reuben, the men of Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh crossed over armed before the children of Israel as Moses had spoken to them. About 40,000 prepared for war crossed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho. On that day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they feared him as they had feared Moses all the days of his life. Then the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, command the priests who bear the Ark of the Testimony to come up from the Jordan. Jordan, therefore, command the priests, saying, come up from the Jordan. And it came to pass when the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord had come from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet touched the dry land, that the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. The chronology of this passage is difficult to follow. It seems that after the people and the flocks had crossed the dry riverbed, that the stones were removed as the priests still stood there. Verse 9 tells us that Joshua himself set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant stood. This verse also adds they are there to this day. Verse 10 says that the people hurried and crossed over. You can imagine a caravan that must have stretched for miles, 2 to 3 million people. What a caravan. I imagine just a shout of triumph as the last of the people and their animals walked up the opposite bank. And finally, the priests were ordered to come up from the midst of the riverbed. And verse 18 says that just as soon as the soles of the priests' feet touched the dry land on the western bank, the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. Imagine the sound of that wall of water rushing down the riverbed as it restarts. I'll bet some of the people shouted, danced, praised God. Others, I think, probably just stood in silent wonder at the miracle of God. God received glory through his people. Look at verse 19. Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they camped in Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up in Gilgal. Then he spoke to the children of Israel, saying, when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what are these stones? Then you shall let your children know, saying, Israel crossed over this Jordan on dry land, where the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed over, as the Lord your God did at the Red Sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed over, that all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. As they finally set foot in their promised land, made their camp, we are again reminded of how Joshua set up the 12 stones in the area known as Gilgal in the Jordan Valley. Again, we are reminded that these 12 stones were a memorial to this day when God worked wonders among his people. Verse 24 is a key verse. It tells us why God brought this generation to the land in such a spectacular fashion. That, look at this, that all the people of the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, and that you may fear the Lord your God forever. God's whole purpose for the people of Israel and his dealing with them was that through them the world might know him. His mighty acts through them were a testimony to the world of his glory. Guys, God still receives glory through his people. When God works among his people, the world notices and he is glorified. When a person is saved, the angels shout and unbelievers marvel at the change that has come over that person, and God is glorified. Wanda and I were at Ontario Mills Mall on Monday. And I was looking at some shirts there in one of the factory outlet places. In fact, it was at Penny's. And I saw some that I liked, and I thought I would try them on and see if they fit, you know, because not all 4Xs fit. It's close, but it's not that bad. And so I went to the dressing room with these shirts that I'd picked up. And as I was walking in, this girl says, how many shirts do you have? And I looked at her, and she looked at me. And she said, Pastor Chuck. And I said, Heather. She said, Pastor Chuck, what are you doing here? I said, Heather, what are you doing here? And she was a gal from Juvenile Hall that I had spent a lot of time with. And we stood there, and she unabashedly told me what she's doing now. And how God had changed her life.
you know, through things that happened in juvenile hall and through some the stuff we'd done in prayers, and we'd helped her in ways and so forth. And God's light was shining because people are standing around and they're listening. And I looked to see, and there were big smiles on these people's faces as they were listening to this, you know, hard-looking girl standing there thanking me for presenting Jesus Christ to her. And our life has changed because of that. Her mother gave her up, and she's in a foster home, but she's doing fine, you know, better than she's ever done. And that's what I mean, man, you know. When people get saved and God changes their lives, He is glorified. And I stood there and I watched people around with big smiles on their faces. You know, God's being glorified in that conversation. It was incredible. When a new Christian matures, people notices. People notice and God is glorified. Isn't that true? You know, they say, well, what's that? And they're glorified. God's glorified. When things happen in church, people notice and God is glorified. When you choose to take a step of faith and put your feet in the water, not an eighth of an inch, 12, 15 feet deep, and if God doesn't come through, you're off with the current, man. And when you take that step of faith and you walk in faith, God is glorified. When you stand at that barrier and say, that barrier is not going to stop me any longer. That habit, that addiction, that sin, that attitude, that situation, that self-centeredness, whatever it is, that thing is no longer going to be a barrier in my life for me serving God. I'm going to knock that thing down in Jesus' name. And when you take that step and do that, God is glorified. And I guess my prayer for you, for me, for this church, because I'm not satisfied yet with what God's doing, man. I mean, he's busy, but I'm not satisfied by the way we're receiving what he's doing, man. Okay? He wants to work in your life like you've never even known possible. He wants to work in my life in areas that I've never even let him have access to before. He wants to break down some stuff in your life, in your marriage, in your ministry, in your job, in everything, man. If you'll stand there and say, this barrier is no longer stopping me. I'm going to step into that water. I'm going to take this step of faith. And Lord, if that current just takes me, then it's up to you. And when you do that, God is glorified. Don't you want to make decisions that glorifies God? When you walk away from that thing, my friend, that you know isn't right, you're glorifying God. Wow, isn't that cool? I guess I pray. And my prayer right now is that in everything we do, God is glorified. We are told in His Word to live to the praise of His glory. That people would look at me, they would look at you, they'd look at this church, and they would glorify God. They would say, isn't God good? Isn't He wonderful? And they'll glorify God because they're going to see things in your life. As you reach out to other brothers and sisters, as you begin to open your homes to each other, as you begin to, you know, let's knock some walls down and be closer and all the stuff that God wants to do in this church, man. As we take steps, you know, God will be glorified. As you grab somebody and say, can I pray with you, bro? Or you pray with me? Are you doing okay? Spending some time with people instead of just coming and going and doing our own thing, man. As we do those things, God will be glorified. As we seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, God will be glorified. And He'll bless us and meet the needs, man. Well, aren't you glad I only did four chapters? Let's stand.